YouTube is a website where you can make money. On any website where you can make money, there will be people who try to make money. Some people will be doing that through the way that was designed. Other people will be trying to do it by any means necessary, and other people will be doing it in some like sort of gray, moral gray area. There is a company called The Soul Publishing, and they're it's like based in Russia. It's a big production house, has a ton of employees. They make 5 Minute Crafts, which is now the third most subscribed channel on YouTube. When I first talked about it, they had 15 million subscribers, and that was a year ago. They have 50 million today.
Welcome to That Creative Life. Hi, my name is Sarah Dici, and I am your host. I talk with artists, YouTubers, CEOs, and everyone in between. I hope this podcast helps you live your best creative life. Enjoy. Welcome to another episode of That Creative Life. We have a special guest, Jarvis Johnson.
Hello.
By the way, you have the coolest name ever.
Thank you, Jarvis.
Johnson, you're meant to be internet famous.
I did not used to like my name.
What?
And then Iron Man came out, and I started to like... Because the problem was, I thought my name was weird, and everyone heard it as Travis. And that's not at all similar to my name, but
no.
I think what happens is that people like hear a name that they don't recognize, and they try to bucket it into like one of the names that they know.
Right.
And what Iron Man did for me was it taught a lot of people that Jarvis was a name.
And smart.
Sure, I'll take that.
Synonymous with,
yeah.
You know, being a genius.
And I can thank my mom for the alliteration, so now I sound like a Marvel character.
Jarvis Johnson.
Yeah, me and Peter Parker hang out every day.
I love it. But okay, so you were a software engineer at Patreon,
yes.
Yelp. You interned at Google.
It's true.
Wow. And now you are a YouTuber.
That's so also true.
What an amazing journey. And I feel like it's so funny because recently we saw a similar journey from Cody Ko,
who was a software
engineer at Fullscreen.
Yes.
He's an iOS developer, and now he's a YouTuber.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very interesting arc there.
I think that it's really funny. Danny Gonzalez, who is another YouTuber in that sphere, he went to the same college as me. And
where's that?
Studied, which is Georgia Tech. And he studied computational media, which is like a media and arts tech like
amazing
degree. So it was like everybody in my crew of like the College of Computing at Georgia Tech was either a CS or a CM major. And like finding out, he was like a few years below me, so I didn't know him. But finding out that afterward, I was like, this small world. There's a lot of us hiding out there.
That is so funny.
A little secret CS people.
Honestly, my first question is, as a electrical engineering and computer science dropout after 3.5 years, what did I miss? What fun stuff did I miss by skipping the initial jobs and going straight to being a YouTuber?
You know, you didn't miss much depending on what you care about. Cause like, the thing about a computer science degree is that it's not necessary to do a software job at all. It's just like it's a very theoretical basis, and that's helpful.
I'm going to be honest. I was a year and a half away from a degree. I knew nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. I could do a pyramid of asterisks and
that's fun.
I was okay in Python.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was it.
It's such a broad... thing, like of such a broad field, there's so many things you could be doing, and it splinters off immediately after you get into industry. And so most people come in with these like general degrees, and they go work at a larger company, and they start to specialize, or some people start to specialize earlier than that. But yeah, you didn't miss much, unless you really nerd out about like math and algorithms and stuff.
I mean, sometimes I miss the bragging rights of my favorite thing was to go to Christmases and Easters with my family, and for them to be like, Sarah, how is the computer science degree?
You're
gonna be an engineer, you know. Mm-hmm. Still, even though I'm successful on YouTube, you know, they could probably care less.
It's honestly like I think these days the degree in that field specifically is less important. And if you ever wanted to pick those skills back up, you're going to have a leg up on the competition. So don't sell yourself short. I'll tell you my favorite thing that you did miss was that I took a computer vision class, and I learned about how to track faces, like teach a computer to like track like a moving face in like a video frame and stuff. a lot more matrices and math than you want it to be. I think that's at the end of the day, or machine learning is the same way. I like having an understanding of all these concepts so that I can use them in a, a very superficial context or a joke context, like I can do in videos.
To brag, just be like, yeah, I know linear algebra, there, guys. Like,
I know, but I don't, it doesn't come up. You just kind of have to know it's under the hood. Yeah, like I couldn't do, matrix multiplication right now if you like gave me a problem set.
You know what is really messed up though, why it was fine that I was in that degree, is when I got to linear algebra and we got away from the, calculus 2 and 3, I started enjoying school again. Like, yeah. I really loved algebra. So when I took my linear Diffie Q class, I was like, oh, this is fun.
I think I realized in the middle of college that I skated by in CS because I did a lot of stuff on my own time.
Yeah. And I think it requires that because I was doing nothing on my own time and I was editing videos in the back of the classroom.
Right.
It was a sign of things to come. And I was falling behind.
No, but it's like, yeah,
severely.
It's important. What was I saying? Just that. What was I saying?
You had to do things on your own.
Yeah, because otherwise, like, the coursework a lot of times was super boring. And so I wasn't, like, super energized by it always.
What did you do on your own? I mean, did you find projects with your friends? What'd you do?
I did a lot of hackathons, and I was in a lot of student org. So the cool thing about Georgia Tech was that there were a bunch of highly motivated people doing clubs in, like, a very productive way. So, for example, mobile app development was like this hip thing. Like I was a freshman in 2010. And I think in like 2009, a couple of students were like, I want to learn how to make Android apps because that's a new hot thing. Let's make a club. And then the college would like fund it to get pizza. I've eaten so much Papa John's pizza. So the thing, my entire college was just like, at Georgia Tech, there was like a building that was like the College of Computing building. On the third floor of it was a lounge called like the student orgs room. And it was where all of us who were in all the clubs, because it was just a community. It was just like, it's like, we're just like, we just had like couches and we like played Super Smash Brothers and like helped each other with our homework, which is wholesome. and then would go to these clubs and eat free pizza all day. I will never eat Papa John's pizza again, I think. Yeah.
And I think that's okay.
That's okay.
I think that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm not missing out on much.
Exactly.
I don't think.
I mean, so I want to get to, this journey of software engineer turned YouTuber, but tell me about your YouTube channel right now. How did it start and what is it right now? Because I am so fascinated this intersection that I think kind of explains not just the fact that you're personable, funny, a great human, channel is great, but your timing was interesting because I feel like at the same time that commentary and animation has been exploding, you kind of came along and bridged that gap.
Well, so there's a lot of random stuff going on. I change...
Because that's a recent thing.
I change things I do on YouTube a lot more than people give me credit for. I think there's like a section of... I'm not trying to like, I need to be credited more. It's just that I've made a lot of videos of a lot of different types and in search of like something that I wanted to do for longer periods of time, like a season or like a saga. So commentary is where I landed right now because I liked watching, Drew Gooden and Danny Gonzalez.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
Drew's, again, kind of recent. He's not an OG YouTuber.
Oh, yeah. But like a lot of those people who came from Vine who are like super funny, you just like see elements of things where you're like, oh, I love how this platform is being used for this. Oh yeah, you asked me to explain my YouTube channel. I can just like, let me start my YouTube story. So I'm 14 years old. I play a video game called RuneScape. I make a YouTube account because I want to upload a video of me playing that game. I put it up. It's a video of me playing PvP, beating other players, set to a Ludacris song. That, got like 800 views. So I'm pretty proud of it in 2007. And then after that, I made
2007.
Yeah. And then after that, I made a video of myself dancing to a High School Musical 2 song. And that, you know, because obviously the next follow-up, the content strategy back then was very regimented. So it was RuneScape video, High School Musical dance video, that got like 60,000 views in 2007, which is like a lot. Like it was on blogs and stuff, which was weird. And then I got terrified because I was afraid of, this is like the theme of my life is like being afraid of failing publicly. And I was like, oh no, how do I top this thing? I've had like a successful thing. I don't know, what if the next thing I make isn't successful, you know, which is a thing that still occurs in my brain now, but I know that it's dumb. But back then I was like, oh, I just won't make anything anymore. Which is not the correct answer. I did make a meme. There's like a meme called Get On, which is, it's like, it's a Japanese meme. It's Get Down. It's based on Golden in the game GoldenEye 007. For the N64, if you like, there was a scenario under which you would pull the cartridge halfway out of the console and the models on screen would start like jumping around like in this weird way. And some people in Japan started doing that with their bodies, where they're just like, wow. They basically took a bunch of photos of them like jumping in the air and it looks like they're doing that. And it's set to this specific song. And so me and my buddy thought this, like saw an episode of Know Your Meme, which was a YouTube series. Now, definitely a website that's still updated. I don't know if they still do YouTube stuff. But about Get Down, and we were like, oh, we want to do a Get Down video. So I did a Get Down video, and that also got 60,000 views. Wow. And so I was like, now I definitely need to
I'm
quit.
I'm YouTube. Oh, I was like, that's your answer, Jarvis.
Yeah. No, that's when I literally like never uploaded again.
Wow.
Until 2017, when I went to VidCon for work and was like, okay, these are pretty inspiring talks. Maybe there is
maybe
space.
Maybe I'll make a video.
Maybe there's space for my voice on the internet. You've convinced me, Hank Green or whatever. But yeah, growing up, I was a big fan of Vlogbrothers, and they were like my internet dads. Mm-hmm. Who
I
taught
think
me how to be an adult.
A lot of internet dads. Yeah.
I'm like very lucky to have found them in 2007, which was when they were doing Brotherhood 2.0. And it was a very different time on YouTube. Like, there were no Facebook fan pages. There were weird ways the communities existed online. So I'm like Facebook friends with John Green. He doesn't really use Facebook because he's like off the internet. And I'm kind of, he didn't really use Facebook before that, really. But it was him. And
that's a cool thing to say.
It's because you had 5,000 Facebook friends and people just like friended people. And so I got a chance to tell this to John Green at VidCon, despite my better judgment. And I think he left. So that was, you know.
Well, hey, you can
wipe sweat off a forehead.
You can message him nowadays.
Oh, no, I would never in a million years do that.
I think one of my biggest YouTube moments, not biggest, but one of the moments I was like, this is sick, was Hank Green followed me on Twitter. I don't know why.
I still
but I was just like
received that
OG YouTube
honor.
coming to my world. I was like, yeah. Oh, that was
I've
cool.
only ever been awkward in front of the both of them, and I think that that's for the best.
Yeah.
I think that that's like kind of how it has to go.
And then, you know what? In 5 years, you're going to be best friends with them. That's how this world works.
Yeah, there was a live episode.
In a year.
I went to PodCon. And there was a live episode of Hank's podcast, Delete This, that he does with his wife, where he was reading a reply, and I was in the reply chain, and he said my first name and not my last. Like, he just said, Jarvis says, and I was like, do you know? Is that a semblance that you're aware of who I am?
You know?
Or is this like the 10 times that we've met where I've like pretended it was the first time because I'm so awkward?
That is so funny. Well, so what made you get over that initial fear?
Yeah, good. So, good question. So, Nick Jenkins, who's a producer on, speaking of the Hank Green connection, a producer on Crash Course, and he produces Hank and John's podcast. He was on a panel, and there was something about what he said that really resonated with me, and it ended up being the topic of my first video, which was called Baby Steps, and it's essentially just like a Vlogbrothers style vlog, because that was like all I knew. It was essentially that like my fear of failure was based on this like something about it, like ending things or whatever. And the fear of failure is like so natural. And he gave this anecdote of in film school, how you're producing so often that the reason that publishing and releasing things is so scary for many people is because it's a rare event. It's not like a thing a lot of people do a lot of times. And I, for example, had only released things to the world a handful of times. I'd done a lot of first tries. Like I had a podcast when I was 14.
Which is crazy.
Yeah,
it's like, ahead of your time.
We did 5 episodes and I listened back to them and I'm like, the audio quality is not bad. It's very strange. I like was recording into the cheapest mic on the planet.
What did you use to distribute that?
Like, good question. There are a lot of threads and we'll get back to them. I will tell you, I uploaded it to Mega Upload. Because I could not afford Libsyn. I knew about Libsyn because I listened to...
So Libsyn was a thing back then.
Libsyn literally has not changed since 2006.
Wow.
Yeah, like it's just... And no, I mean, it's a great product. Even now, I've used all of the like new school stuff.
Yeah.
And I like built Patreon's RSS feature.
Nice.
And so I'm like very... I know a lot about RSS. I still think Libsyn does a good... It's horrible at selling itself as a product, but it's like... It's a backbone in the podcasting industry. I've done a lot of first tries because after I've done a few of those things, I either lost interest or was like, well, to continue doing this is to recognize the opportunity for failure. Whereas like, if I just tried something, somebody could be like, wow, that was like really good for a first try. And I could be like, exactly. I will never do this again. and the Nick Jenkins' anecdote was that, publishing is scary because it's so infrequent. So in film school, you're producing so often that it becomes natural to just like toss something over the fence, even if it's not perfect or whatever, because there's like this due date. And the concept of getting more comfortable with putting things out there despite success or failure was the goal of making that first video. Because at the end of it, I'm like, you know, regardless of how this video does, there's going to be another one. And then there was another one. And then I don't know, like what, I think I had started my YouTube channel with a friend of mine. We both worked at Patreon at the time. She worked in iOS. I did like, I was all over the place, but, she started a tech channel. Her name's Mayuko. Everybody who's interested in software engineering and is sad that I don't do software engineering videos anymore should just watch her channel. And her first video got 1 million views.
Very first title? Video,
0 subscribers. Mm-hmm. I was like view number 3 or something on
it.
It was called Day in the Life of a Software Engineer.
Mm.
And it was we recognized from that there was this huge untapped market for like tech YouTubers. And I personally didn't want to be known for tech, but
it was a good starting point.
It was like, I alternated, like at no point, I like keep looking at this because people have revisionist history about me, I guess. And I'm like, is that true? I don't actually know. But at no point was my channel more than 50% tech videos. But because those were the things that got views, there are people who've only seen those videos from me because those are the only things that have been recommended to them.
When you say tech videos, it's more engineering.
Yeah, because I guess tech is like, I think, I forget
that
like...
smart tech. I'm dumb tech.
No, because
I talk about specs.
No, you're right. I tech is the name of, like MKBHD is a tech YouTuber.
Yeah. But you're talking about San Francisco tech.
We're talking about
tech,
more like the Silicon Valley-y engineering YouTube.
Right, which is a thing in pop culture, but YouTube really, no one has experimented with that until now, I feel like.
Yeah.
Now there's a few popping up.
Yeah, and so I was like, oh, I can just do like these Vlogbrothers style videos, but then talk about like my experiences in industry because I feel like there are so many misconceptions that I keep having about the world that I like that hinder me from realizing my potential, like my imposter syndrome or, you know, being afraid to fail by publishing stuff or not knowing how to get a job and stuff like that, that it ends up being in this niche, but truly I wanted all the stuff to be wide appeal. But you get into this dance with YouTube where you're like, well, if I put the word software engineer in the title, it gets more views. Yeah.
But that's essentially niching down, you know, even though that is something that might do well, people identify with that and say, oh, yeah, I am a software engineer. Yeah. And I think that's what YouTube is good at, is you can find really your niches on these sides of the internet.
Yeah.
You know, I watched a few of your first videos on, and the videos on your now kind of like tech lifestyle channel,
second channel. The one that I would make videos on if I figured out how to have my shit together with the first channel.
But it's interesting. Do you have that, I guess, what is the percentage of, ooh, I want to do these types of videos, whether it's tech or lifestyle. And then what's the percentage of, I want to do fun commentary. Yeah. I want to talk about my perspective on the world. What is that poll like?
I don't know. So what it is, like, I,
by
like,
the way, he's been a full-time YouTuber for only 3 months,
right?
So, but you still have time to figure it
out. But also, like, I've managed to succeed so far by just putting something out that I think is good and will work, quote unquote work. And then sometimes they do work. And then that's like, and here we are today. So I'm in New York for like this YouTube Creator Summit and everyone's pitching their channels and I still don't have an elevator pitch, and that's become my brand. So the way I thought about it was like, what do I want to say? And then how do I package that? So at the start, it was like, what do I know about? What unique value can I offer? And I think from the very beginning, I was thinking about my YouTube as a product, because I was just so used to working in product organizations. And I was almost testing myself against my ability to make a product in the communities that I enjoyed watching on YouTube. And that's kind of still how it is now. Like,
what were some of those channels?
For starters, Vlogbrothers and Nathan Zed were like huge influences. And I've just like, as I've like sort of the year, 2 years have gone by, I've just like consuming, I do this thing where I like binge channels. And I also do a lot of channel studies where I'm like, oh, why does what they do work? So it's like, I've watched like a million Peter McKinnon videos, a million Casey Neistat videos. And MKBHD is also like one of my favorite creators. And it's like, none of them make stuff that I'm not going to start doing like tech reviews. But the one thing I appreciate about what you do and what like MKBHD does, especially in this like tech sector that specifically, is like just the caring about the thing, and like, I don't know, there's just like a craft and like I just love watching a community exist that's accessible to me. It's like, I know what all these words mean, so now I'm just gonna like have someone tell me about the speaker. And to be honest, I've probably spent $1,000 on things that MKBHD has talked about, just because I'm like, maybe I do need a
that's Google probably Home Max speaker. A pretty good, yeah. $1,000 is good. I'll watch his gear video and be like, oh yes, I do need a $50,000 red camera.
Yes. So I'm really happy to say that I have not fallen into that trap, because I also know that it's a trap.
Yes.
Because like, and the way that I know this, and I always need these examples. So if anybody is like, I don't want to start a YouTube channel because I don't have the equipment, you're lying to yourself. Yes. No, but truly,
if you don't have a phone, your friend has a phone.
Check out Joanna Cedia. She's a YouTuber who's like been on the platform for 6 months, 2 million subscribers. She got a million subscribers in 3 months. All of the videos are filmed on her iPhone. And she's like in high school being a relatable teen.
Oh, I know who that is. Yeah. She's Emma Chamberlain 2.0. That's basically what people called her.
Okay. Yeah.
But however, she seems like she is very creative. I love her, the paint by numbers video.
She's extremely talented, and she
relatable. People love relatable. Her.
She does a bunch of different stuff, which I really respect, because I personally worry a lot about switching up formats. And I think that she's a great example of like clearly not doing any of the metadata hacks, or whatever, and doing stuff that she cares deeply about and saying things she cares deeply about. And I think she's like really smart. Like, she did a video about college that wasn't about about school, and it wasn't about dropping out of school. It was about why she's staying in school. And I was like, I love this. And also, whatever decision you make, it's fine. But I think that your thought process here is like really good. You, good job, parents.
Yeah, yeah,
and good
yeah,
job, Joanna, for being a good influence for these young people.
That's why YouTube's so great, because you have that full spectrum of opinions, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Do you, with gear, do you think there's a level that you can get at that people say, oh, you're not relatable anymore? Like, do you think that comes with shooting a video in 8K?
Well, so it really depends on the ecosystem that your video exists in. The other example I was going to give is like my friend Micah, her first video was shot on her iPhone also. So it's like, everybody, if you have an iPhone, actually any modern smartphone, they've got great microphones.
I see rocking the Pixel over there.
Oh, no, that's the iPhone. I just have a D-brand skin on it.
Oh, I legit thought that was a Pixel
because
of the white.
I wanted the white skin. And
it
now
looks
it's
good.
Getting messy.
But, it looks
but
good.
For first glances, you don't see all the imperfections.
Right.
It's
like me. I'm very white.
You don't
see the imperfections until you get close. That was a stretch.
No, it was great. So for like MKBHD, for example, I love that it's almost a part of his brand that his videos are as good looking as they are. I don't think it would hurt my brand a ton to if I had MKBHD quality, but it would also not be something that was like fun for me. Yeah. Like I don't
and
even.
And that's why a lot of those people are doing it, is because they enjoy those.
Exactly.
And they want to have fun with
100 Like there's so many like things that I don't do or stop doing on purpose that because I'm like, do I care about this? Is this truly like raising the, cause you only have so much time. Right. And it's like, is this worth my time?
And what you get in return is not going to equal how much you spent on that red camera.
I can tell you every imperfection about all of my videos. Like I don't cringe when I watch them when I've had enough distance from them, but some things are so jarring to me because I notice all the little things and I'm forcing myself not to act on it, because if I kept acting on all of the little things, I would never publish anything. And that was a
which
thing
is such a key part
about getting, you know, getting stuff out was big. Finding ways to make content that didn't take a long time to make is a thing that I used to be able to do. And now I am making like full on like AIs for videos, and it's like, what the hell is happening?
What does that mean?
Well, that was like, that's a bit of an overstatement. It was just that for a gag in a video, I was talking about an animation content farm channel, and I downloaded all of their like subtitle files and fed them into like this like language model, like neural network thing, to see if it's good at generating like English text. They actually put an article like, we didn't release the full model because it could be used to like make really convincing fake news, which is like actually like ethically, yeah, we got to watch out.
Whoa.
But I like fed it these like 100 scripts, and it like started spitting out stuff that, you know, sounds like the channel, and it like completely stops making sense like a few sentences in, but it was so much fun to play around with. And I love
like
doing
that's your
gags
edge,
like that
though, you know.
Well, that's,
and that's like,
yeah,
you know, one video every now and then you just remind them that you're the software engineer genius, and you're like, hey,
not
guys, I'm not just funny, I'm smart too.
I will tell this, I will say this till the day I die, you don't have to be a genius to be a software engineer. I think of it the same way I think of editing videos. It's just like creative problem solving. It's like you like learn a set of tools, and then you apply those tools to, you have like a vision, and then you use those tools to like achieve that
vision. I feel like I became a better video editor when I was pursuing my computer science degree, because it was constant problem solving, right? And I would find myself in Premiere solving problems ways that I would never think before, and I'd be like, oh, is this the computer science side of my brain?
Yeah, you're taught to think in like this systematic way,
right? Which is good. I mean, I give that degree a bad rap, but it does teach you how to think think in a productive way.
I would never like, from I think that I perfectly I've like heard you talk about like your college experience and stuff, and I 100% support and respect any decision that anyone's making with when they're putting a lot of thought into it. And I think you did that. And so you're fine. Don't worry about that.
It just wasn't for me.
Yeah, it wasn't. And for me, I'm like really happy to have done it. And I would like, if I was doing everything again, I would do everything exactly the same way. I'm also happy to have that skill set and the tool kit. You know what I mean? Because now there's so many problems that creators run into that I'm running into. And I'm like, oh, we could like pave over this thing. Like I have a lot of little like, tools that I've made to like make video making easier. Like,
oh my God, tell me.
Yeah. Like for example, there's a product that can remove the background, from a photograph. So if you want to cut yourself out of a thumbnail and you have like frizzy hair like me you don't want to spend any time doing that.
Oh, so I literally makes Photoshop.
Type in, yeah.
You so don't like have part to go into Photoshop.
I do go into Photoshop for everything about making my thumbnail, but instead of spending the time cutting it out myself, I take my photos. I like put them into Lightroom. I like do the pass on the photo in Lightroom. And then I literally run my like little command line thing on it. And then it just like pops out a transparent background version of the photo. So I like save myself, you know, hours. Yeah. Over.
Is that a program people can download?
It's called remove.bg and okay. It's a website that you can use. And it costs, I think it's 30 cents per thing, which is very worth it for me because if I was thinking of like,
and you just built it into your flow.
And so they have an API. And so nice. I have a couple of, like I have a YouTube video downloader, little program that's based on like an open source thing where, when I type on my, I'm in command line a lot. Like that's a comfort area for me. I don't write like that much code anymore, but here I am talking about like all these little nits, but truly I don't, my main channel could like never talk about code again. Mm. And
why do you think that?
I would be happy with that because it's not, I want my main channel to be an entertainment channel, because I have like a lot, I think I have a very optimistic worldview. But I'm also able to be cynical about things.
Right.
Like I think, you know, we could talk about all the like crap that Facebook has been up to until the end of time. And I could criticize like Mark Zuckerberg or whatever, but also I don't think it means the end of days. You know what I mean? I'm like, I think at the, I have this macro optimism and this micro, like, it's not judgmentalness, but but it's like
skepticism.
It's skepticism.
Healthy. Yeah.
Yeah, healthy skepticism. I like to think. And so for me, I like the comedy that breeds from that. And I want to just apply that to more things in the world. And I want to make people feel good, or have a laugh at no one's expense. Like if I'm making fun of life hacks, I usually don't make fun of people unless they're really problematic people that I'm very concerned about, like being on the platform.
Well, when you're making fun of life hacks, who knows? There's probably, you know, tens, maybe hundreds of people behind it spitting out this user generated crap.
So there's literally hundreds of people and it's like freelancers and it's no one's vision. Like there's no person's artistic vision here.
They're just feeding it into the algorithm. They want the AdSense.
Exactly.
Like, can we, okay. I want to dive a little bit
into
actually happened. Okay.
Oh yeah. Let's
finish
talk about
thought.
That. Wait, let's wrap up some other threads real quick. So, what were we talking about just before then? I just want to like tie these up because when I'm listening to a podcast and I'm like, oh, but they never came back to that thing.
Not going back to engineering videos on your main channel.
Mostly just like
and attacking people.
The way I used to say it was like, I want to think about engineering the way I want to talk about, I want in software to be a part of my channel the way that, writing is a part of Vlogbrothers channel for John Green, right? Like it's like he's not talking about writing all the time, but it's like a part of the lens that he views the world. And that's how I want to, like, if there's ever a technical topic to chime in on or a way that I can like expertly roast Facebook or I can do a
that's your unique vision.
I can
and
do
perspective.
A VPN brand deal very differently than somebody else.
Exactly.
Or Squarespace. I can explain to you why I would use, or I actually should not say these names of these brands.
No,
I could use a
Squarespace, NordVPN, Wix. Yeah. Hit them up, guys.
Taco Bell. I don't. I'm just naming random
this
brands
is, this
now.
This is shoot your shot. Who else?
Maserati.
Yes.
Ferrari. But I like. I could do, what was I saying? I could do a VPN brand deal differently than someone else, or a, I could explain why I would use any unnamed site builder website over building something myself,
right?
Because I know how to build it myself and I know why I don't want to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because it's hell.
Yeah. It's like,
oh,
I
yeah.
built-
were you in the Tumblr days building your own website and stuff and doing the HTML
I
and stuff?
I wasn't, to be honest. Okay. So we're backtracking.
Yes.
So there's that. And then the, we're talking about like journey. So essentially, I made some normal vlogs, some comedy vlogs, some sketches interspersed with like tech video versions of that, like talking about my experience in the software industry. And then I made a video. I loved watching commentary videos, and I was like, I want to make videos like this. I was like, how do I do it? And then I started thinking about like, well, how do I transition these tech people into me just making anything? So I was like, okay, what if I like did a commentary format, but talked about software engineering? So I did a commentary video roasting bad software engineering advice, and then I was like, at the end of that, I inserted 5-minute crafts into it, which wasn't actually related to the video, but I made it seem like it was. And then I was like, I'm gonna do 5-minute crafts video, and now people, when I do a 5-minute crafts video, will still be confused because it doesn't work at all to do what I did. And so like that video is like the worst performing video on my channel. And then I was like, well, I'll never do that again. And then I started, doing like Casey Neistat-y videos just cause I was having fun learning the editing tricks and stuff. Just like when you watch something and then you're like, oh, I want to see how to do that or try to do the whip pan or whatever. And then I did that a bit and I was like, this is exhausting. And I've learned enough about how to do it that I no longer want to show off by doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause it's not a part of my, I'm like learning on the job. Right. And so it's like, what does my impression of Casey Neistat look like? I want to try it. You know what I mean? And then I learned a lot by doing that. I'm not Casey Neistat. I'm not going to make that my brand. You just witnessed me giving it a shot. And then it's like, I, you know, put that in my,
skill set.
I put that in and I move along. And so, I had this like 6-video content strategy for like getting out of making tech videos. Cause the reason that I didn't want to make tech videos, quote unquote, is because I realized how much people were just coming for the information rather than my personality. And I wasn't sure how to build a personality.
And there's a lot of expectation that comes with that. Expectation, yeah.
I would get comments that were like,
for information.
I mean, could you cut out the comedy sketches and like just give the information? I'm like, no, you've come to the wrong place.
Fun.
Like, that's not actually in like what they don't know is that the reason that I'm talking about tech in the first place is so that someone will watch my comedy sketches. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And so then there's a thing that people come back at me now with, which is like, well, you started in tech and now you've like sold out to make this other thing. And it's like, no, I actually sold out to do tech videos,
right?
Because my other stuff, I would have gone that way first, but it wasn't getting any views. So I was like, I'll play the game. And this is actual value and information that I want to offer. But if you know, you only have 24 hours in the day, maybe that's not, I don't want to do my 9-to-5 tech job and then go home and make tech videos. Then in, what's it called? So 6 months, I think around June or something, I'd made a bunch of videos after that failed 5-minute crafts video. And then Cody Ko actually put out a video. I do not know if this is related, but what happened? I was in San Diego for a wedding, for Mayuko's wedding, actually. And Cody Ko put out a video called 5-minute crafts, and it was him roasting 5-minute crafts. And I was like, oh, you have now done the thing that I did 6 months ago. That no one saw, let me change my title to be more similar to yours. So
nice.
I changed the title to 5-Minute Crafts is the worst channel on YouTube.
Did the algorithm pick it up?
And then, yeah, like it got 2 million views in 48 hours, pretty shortly after making that change.
Wow.
And so then while that was happening, I was like, oh, this is my chance. You know, this is my shot. Do not miss my chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime. You better lose yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's from the poet.
Eminem.
That's his name. Yeah.
Yes.
I thought
yes.
it was Skittles. That's from the rapper G-Eazy. So I was like, oh, okay, I've got all these views coming in. I say the 2 million views in 48 hours thing. What actually happened was like, I started seeing it get views weirdly because it was such an old video, but it was starting to get as many views as like some of the recent videos. You know how like a video will kind of like get 100 views or whatever. And I was like, oh, it's like keeps picking up. And then one day I like sat down at my desk at work and I was like, what is happening? Because it just like, whoosh, there's a point where it was like getting 50,000 views an hour or something like that. And I was like, what is going on?
This is it. It's happening.
And so I think around the time it had 300,000 views, I was like, I need to make a video to capture people who just watched this video. So I made a video about Trum Trum, which is an also amazingly interesting life hacks and DIY channel. And that video also took off. And so then I was like kind of building the road as I was driving on it to capture this new audience at the same time, upsetting, my tech friends who were very confused. And I was like, it's not you, it's me. Cause I truly wanted to be, I felt like that gave me a lot more flexibility to do what I wanted to do creatively, even if it's not like, you know, even if now my views, the videos where I'm talking about life hacks get more views, I am still closer to general, like stuff. You know, like I eventually would love to get to a place where, like Casey and I sat, people are just like, what is your opinion on this thing?
Right.
It's just a fun goal to have. And you like to have the creative freedom. You don't want to feel as confined. Right. So started doing that and then got worried that I was going to become the life hack guy and then started like mixing it up again. And then I started making videos way more infrequently because work was picking up because I had a full-time job. And then I had this inflection point where I was like, okay, this is completely unsustainable because I essentially had a year. I'm abridging my entire story.
Yes.
Because I do want to get into these other like nitty-gritty conversations.
I mean, it's good for context.
And so then
At Patreon.
I was at Patreon, which I love dearly. I love all the people there. I texted
CEO Jack Conti has been on this podcast. Yeah, Shout out to Jack.
I'm going to text him after this. I texted him that I was here for Creator Summit. We can talk about him. He's been an extremely wonderful mentor to me. And you know, he doesn't have to do that. Yeah, anyway,
he's amazing.
So I'm at this inflection point where I'm like, I'm going to expire if I continue like burning the candle at both ends. Because I was waking up at like 6 a.m. every day working and then getting home at 5 and then like working on video stuff. And then weekends I was working on video stuff because that was the relief I would feel on a Friday or on a Saturday when I could just be like, I can work on video stuff today and there's no meetings that I can get pulled into. And so the channel grew to a point where I was like, it's feasible to try to do full time. Also, theoretically, I'd be able to make more content more frequently. So there's a rationale that I would grow even more because that's a thing that like...
Well, you have to build on the momentum. What you did with that, when that video started picking up, what is the first thing that you have to do? You got to jump on it.
Exactly.
The moment I made a viral video, it was getting momentum. Okay, I had to make another one the day after. I remember, so I made the Casey video. Day after I posted a video, or 2 days after, I was like, 3,000 to 40,000 subscribers in 2 days. That video went viral. And it's like... With YouTube, you have to build on the momentum.
Yeah.
And if you do not shoot your shot in the small window you have, you're kind of done, you know?
Absolutely.
And I think with everyone, with you, with me, there's this inflection point that you talked about where you have to make the jump or it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, for you, that was quitting your job. What was the tipping point?
Oh, yeah. It was basically burnouts because it was a year into doing this where I was just like, I was sacrificing like a lot of relationships in a way that wasn't on purpose. It was just like, oh, I'm only ever working all the time, always. And I don't regret the sacrifice, you know, because it's like, I was enjoying myself. I just like, couldn't keep doing it at that like sort of cadence. And one of my great friends, Jordan, was moving to LA, and I went to I went with him to LA when he signed his lease, and I was like at this cafe, and I was like, you know, maybe I should do this, maybe I should like leave, and I had hit up Jack, who was at work, and I was like, hey, do you have time for like a call for something? And I called him and I was like, yo, here's what I'm thinking about, and he was like super supportive. He was like, as a CEO, I obviously want you to stay, so let's talk about logistics, maybe we can make this work, but then also I know as a creator, you need to, you know, take advantage of this opportunity, and if you don't, you're going to regret it. And I was going to do whatever I was going to do, but it was so helpful feeling supported. Yeah.
And that's something that I know Jack Conte has done through these stories, but also people like Gary Vee, they talk about the importance of building bridges, because you never know when those employees are going to be back. You never know when that employee owns a bajillion dollar company. And because you were nice when they left, well, hey, now they want to bring their work back to you. And it's just one, being a nice human, I think it's always worth it.
Yeah.
But then the byproduct of that is always going to be better than burning the bridge.
I think if you're thinking about the long game, I think people are afraid to lose what they have. And I think it can manifest itself in a lot of insecurity. So how people act in those situations differs from person to person. I'm really happy to have been surrounded by people who, when put in the situation that I put them in, were really supportive and helpful. And so when Jack said that to me, I was like, okay, like I was still going to figure out maybe I wanted to do part-time or something. And as time went on, it like, I kind of started feeling like, oh, maybe I need to like put both feet in and like give it a go for real, for real. And if it doesn't work, that's fine. You know, it's like, I have a plan B. I don't feel like I have, I know there's like differing opinions on plan Bs, but I'm a very risk averse person. Cause I like, don't come from I don't have a safety net of any kind, really. And so I've had to like build all of that for myself. So I couldn't take any risks like this without having paid off my student loans first and without having saved enough to make, I wasn't ready to leave Patreon until I had convinced myself that I could make zero money on YouTube for my like trial period of time and be absolutely okay. So that I wasn't reacting to the daily ebb and flow of like the views on my channel, because if that's connected to my livelihood, then I'm not a very happy person.
Yeah, it's gonna be miserable. And well, if I can
press
the pause button, because I think that's something that a lot of people are struggling with, wanting to pursue a creative career but also being weighed down by stuff like student debt.
Yeah,
can we actually like put a pin in it? And you in videos, you said that, you know, you had to really make a plan and really attack that head on. Like, what did you do? Did you stop eating out? Did you did you sit down with like an accountant person? What'd you do?
I didn't sit down with an accountant person. That maybe would have been smart. I figured out like what I wanted my,
because you were living at San Francisco.
Also like the tech industry, like I was working at Yelp, which isn't Google compensation wise, but it was enough for me to live a college student style lifestyle, which I live in an apartment with four people to this day, that's rent controlled. So I knew that my, you know, and I'm in San Francisco for 5 years now. So with rent control, my rent wasn't going up. I was hoping that my income would go up over time. So there were like things that I could fix to address some of those issues, using, you know, all the benefits I could to spend every like amount of money that I had just sitting around in my bank account that wasn't like living expenses. I was just throwing at my student loans for like every chance I had. You know, obviously ordering by the most interest first. And also, if you're really
a lot of people are there's not a lot of education on it. How did you?
Oh yeah.
You know, like, did you sit down
versus subsidized loans?
Yeah.
Look into the differences, because unsubsidized, I think, tends to have a bigger, shorter period of payback time, and also bigger interest rate. I may have flipped those terms, so definitely look it up. And there's a website called Mr. Money Mustache, which is mostly for people who like are trying to retire early. But I had a friend who was really into personal finance, and so I just started talking to, I had a couple of friends who got really into personal finance. So I invested a bunch of time once learning about like the basics of, you know,
you seeked it out because it's not going to hit you in the face.
Exactly. I took a time, made sure my credit, I was able to build my credit and making sure that I was doing all the right things and not doing anything drastic, and living below my means, to just take everything that I could and just send it to the student loans. I was also really super fortunate. Like, if it weren't for working in the tech industry, it would have taken me far longer. And that's not a thing that I knew going into college. I didn't know anything about the tech industry, to be honest. I started coding because I like heard about it on a podcast, and thought it was cool. And I was in Florida and didn't know anything about Silicon Valley. And so when I got to Atlanta at Georgia Tech, that's the first time I like saw like Facebook and, you know, Google and these places. I was like, oh, those are websites, but like they're in real life too. And then that became a opportunity. You existed in an ecosystem that was like, oh, you know, it's a good thing to try to get these internships at these companies. So I was also groomed to work. I was able to work paid internships from my freshman year. My freshman year, I got an internship as an Android developer which is a Java class. Before I even learned Java, I like over the winter break, me and my friend made a little Android app thanks to one of the student orgs that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And put it out in the App Store. It was awful, but it was complete. And then from that, my friend became an Android developer, and now he's like a senior Android or senior mobile lead person. He went mobile like his whole career. Yeah. And I jumped around, cause very similar to my YouTube, it's like jack of all trades, master of none. So I've like done mobile development. I've done like web backend, all the stuff. So, cause I was so afraid of like not having a marketable skill that I was just like, I will learn everything.
Right.
Cause I was like, the fear of like not having that financial safety net and then having looming student loans was like, oh, I just need to tomorrow, if I like can't do this thing, I need to have plans A through F.
It restricts you when you have that debt on your back. Causes you to take less risks, and that's when it became real. When my parents were, I mean, I was fortunate enough to, my grandparents, they wouldn't give me Christmas gifts, but they would buy me $100 worth of Coke stock.
So that's cool.
when I graduated high school, they're like, okay, it's time, you can use your college fund now. And I had $20,000 in the college fund. And I thought, I was like, oh my gosh, I can go anywhere I want. But then I started looking at prices. Like, okay, this barely gets me a year.
College is criminally expensive.
And so luckily they were smart enough to tell me about it, and like I got a scholarship, but that didn't last me. It lasts me 3.5 years with that in almost a full ride scholarship, which is crazy. And so, but I took a hold of that account, and the moment I saw all of my money going out for one semester of Belmont University, a private university, it was $15,000 for one semester. And I saw my bank account just go to zero. I was like, oh wait. And so when you're handling your personal finances and it's all on you, I think it's a pressure that people need to feel, a personal pressure, because, you know, loans aren't free money.
Loans aren't free money is a huge lesson to learn.
Yeah, you have to deal with it. And so I think when you're in your 20s, have those four roommates, pay off that debt, take the risks.
My thought process is I want to live like I'm just about to run out of patience for living like a college student.
yeah.
You know what I mean? But I wanted to ride it out for as long as possible.
And look at what you're doing now, and look what it's led you to.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. It's like, cause after I paid off my student loans, it was like paying off my student loans, except for like life agency. You know, it's like, cause I want to be able to, if I ever wanted to join a startup, like Patreon, I would never have joined out of school because it was financially irresponsible.
Right.
Even Yelp, I was like, should I have gone back to Google? Because it would have been, I would have definitely been able to pay off my student loans. And there were like mm-hmm. some sort of question marks around whether, like with the timelines of things like that.
Right.
So there are those risks. I had a full ride at the University of Florida, and I was going to go there, but I ended up getting a scholarship that made it affordable to go to Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech had a very good computer science program. And so it was worth the... It was worth it. I couldn't have afforded full out-of-state tuition. I looked at, you know, including student financial aid and stuff, I looked at like my account summary, and it was like $200,000 for my education. I didn't pay $200,000, right. But I like, jeez. It's ridiculous. Like what this is.
It's insane.
I had a bunch of scholarships going in, and then I continued to apply for scholarships.
Mm, yes. They're out there. And tons. That's what people don't realize.
I wrote an essay, and won a $10,000 Google scholarship, like
amazing.
My junior year of college.
Amazing.
And then boom, right into the student
yeah.
loans. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
that's like just like a direct
yeah.
funnel. I studied abroad because it was cheaper to study abroad at my school because of a specific program that we had than to do out of state. Like,
oh my gosh. And
tuition.
See, and what's so crazy too is these scholarships, they're out there. Oh my gosh. If you want to go to college, look at them,
there's
especially engineering.
For being left-handed.
I mean, it's huge, right? But the thing that's crazy though is they expect you to like maintain this crazy GPA. So I got an electrical engineering scholarship, but the requirement was you had to maintain a 3.5 GPA as an electrical engineering major.
Yes.
So I killed myself for 2 years. And when I lost it the third year, I was like, that was the beginning of the end.
Can
for
I tell
me.
You a story?
Yes.
I didn't know. No one really around me and my family had went to college, and I didn't really learn any good habits from school because I kind of just like did stuff. And my first semester, I did not know the course load I was supposed to take, and I took the smallest course load possible. One of which, this is like going to turn into a math equation, but I'll tell you the answer at the end. But I took 12 credit hours. 11 of which had like GPA associated with them, and one of them was a seminar course. I took three classes that was 11 out of my 12 hours, and then one of them was just like, welcome to class, welcome to school, the seminar.
And 18 hours is the usual workload.
Well, I think
right?
12 hours is a common workload, but it really depends on the course, the courses themselves. 18 hours at Georgia Tech would be considered a lot. But I did do that also, which is what I'll get to. I took CS1, Intro to Computer Science. I took Chemistry 1, and I took Calculus 2 or something. And I got a B in Calc. I got an A in CS, and I got a C in Chemistry. And because of the weighting of that, I ended up with a 2.92 GPA.
Oh my
and my minimum for my entire scholarship for my entire school was 3. And I was like, what?
You were 0.1
or no,
below.
I was like so grade wise, it was because of the weighting. It's like 3 credit hours for this A, 3 credit
right.
hours for this B, 4 for this C.
If
it was a 3 credit hour class, you would have had exactly a 3 because you got an A, a B, and a C, but they're not weighted the same. So now you're about to lose your scholarship, Jarvis. So I talked to like an advisor, and they were like willing to give me a second chance.
Wow.
Yeah. And I graduated with like a 3.55 and like highest honors at Georgia Tech.
Oh my gosh. So
yeah.
And also I think that's
scared
an important
straight.
Yeah, scared straight. But that's an important lesson of just showing up, asking questions. Like I think college is going to be the most valuable for people if you seek out help, if you
yeah.
go to those meetings,
you
if you
to.
Talk to your professors, if you go to the clubs. That was my problem. I wasn't willing to be a part of it because
yeah.
there was really no culture at the University of Texas
Arlington.
I was Arlington
so lucky that there was a culture.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
Yeah.
Like seeking community is fun. And finding that is very rewarding. I wasn't enjoying my coursework. I wasn't like having a fun time writing like math proofs and
right.
shit. I was like, it was cool hanging out with my friends and playing
yeah.
video games and having an opportunity because I was in that student orgs to know upperclassmen who'd been through the ringer and were like, oh, you should, here, you should do this. I had a friend sit me down and teach me Java. The reason I was able to, like, I had an internship doing Android development in Java before I took my Java course was because I was in that mobile app club, but then I also had a friend who sat me down at 10 p.m. in the College of Computing. We were just hanging out on the couch watching TV or something, and he was just like, do you want to learn Java? Because I was talking about it, and he just like sat there and taught me everything he knew. That guy's a genius, by the way. But anyway, I'm lucky to know a lot of people who are way smarter than me.
Yeah.
I am on the shoulders of those people.
Well, I think where the confusion happens is people think there's only one solution to get to that point. Yeah. And so no matter where you are, you just have to be involved. You have to find your own community, whether that's college, whether that's at a work, maybe it's more apprenticeship yeah. vibe. You know, when I had my several different jobs or I was volunteering something, or even when I was refereeing basketball, there was someone who was into video 24/7. I was like, okay, so what's ISO and aperture and shutter? You know, so these answers are everywhere. You just have to ask the questions.
My college education was not like just me going to class and getting good grades and that being like a stamp of a success. It was like me having things not click immediately, but showing, like, building relationships with people who are willing to spend time with me or take me under their wing. Like, the technical interview for tech jobs is this absurd process where you, and I've given hundreds of them at this point now from the other side, but it's this absurd process where you essentially have someone in a room on a whiteboard for 45 minutes and you like ask them a technical question and they write code.
Interesting. So is it not, how many golf balls can fit in a school bus?
No, that's like not a thing. It hasn't been a thing for a while, but it's okay. Like a really common myth, but it is like, you know, if you have, here's a really common one. If you're like a teacher, if you're a teacher and you want, and you have like a bunch of students and they all have different like test grades ranging from like whatever to whatever, A's and B's and F's or whatever. How can you find like the top three student? Let's say you have like, how can you find the top three student scores? You know, as an algorithm. And it's like, well, I would just like look through them and like find the best score. And then I would find the second best score. And then I would find the third best score. And it's like, okay, well, what's the big O of that? Like, what is the runtime complexity of that operation? And it's like, oh, okay, well that, I mean, for just three, that I have to make three, like the
length,
of, like if I have a 100 students, or if I have N students, 100 and N are different. So if I have 100 students and I need to find the top three, that's like 3 times 100 or whatever. It's the order of 3 times 100. So it's essentially constant, but because it's a fixed number, I've gotten too into the weeds. if you have like size N though, and it's variable and you're like building a generic algorithm that's supposed to apply to like any size of input, then you're like, oh, okay, that's like 3 times N, which turns into big O of N, which is a linear runtime. And they're like, oh yeah, but what if instead of finding the top three scores, you want to find the top K scores? So it's top variable number. Oh, then it's K times N. And it's like, well, what does that degrade to? It's like, well, that's N squared complexity, which is like exponential. So like as the, you know, it might take 5 seconds to, it might take an instantaneous moment to run that on 100 test scores, but on 100 million test scores, it won't finish in the runtime or in the like life cycle of the sun or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? And so it's like, how do you make that more efficient?
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay, well, no, technically you can do this, that, and the other thing. And you're solving these types of problems
but
on a whiteboard.
Still somewhat abstract. So
they range from abstract to directly applicable to the job. Like the question I asked at Patreon, they still ask, so I can't say it, but it was like a real thing that I did at work. So it's like, hey, we built this product. It has this feature. Here's the mechanics of that feature. And it's a common feature that you've heard of. Here's a problem we ran into. How do we address that problem? And you try to make it like a give and take. My goal is to like make it as collaborative as possible so that you can suss out information. But a lot of people treat it like a test. And when it's treated like a test, it ends up just being a high pressure situation, which is an ego stroke of the interviewer who wants to feel superior intellectually, which is an awful situation to be in.
And a lot of times working a job is more collaborative anyways.
It's not at all a parallel. It comes from the fact that like Google pioneered this interview process, and they did all these studies and testing, and they used to like have SAT scores be a part of the like Google thing. And none of those things were indicators of job performance. But where everyone landed was this like middle ground of like, well, we can't find anything better in the numbers.
So they use SAT.
No. This was like when they first started.
Okay, when they first
started. This was like in the first like 100 employees or whatever.
I
puzzles were another thing.
Oh, puzzles.
Like the question you asked.
Yeah.
Or like the why are manhole covers round, or like how many
windows are in a 50-story building in New York.
Those questions are sometimes asked in product interviews, actually, for specifically those ones. But the ones that are really riddly are no longer asked because people found that like they don't actually measure anything.
Right.
And I think that what we have today in terms of that interview process is okay at measuring someone who went to through a specific degree program. Like if you went to Stanford or top university or whatever, and you went through a CS curriculum and you're a new grad and all that stuff is fresh in your mind and you've prepared for the interview, it's kind of like a standardized test for me.
Right.
That's kind of what it approximates.
But basically it's very specific. That only works for those types of people, right? I want to, in the last few moments, explore something extremely fascinating with these videos you've been doing lately on animation channels.
Sure.
Because it's this, YouTube is this weird dichotomy of individual creators doing their thing. They're being supported. I love it.
Yeah.
But then people who are extorting the YouTube algorithm for just AdSense, right? And they're not what we think they are.
Right.
And so just for some perspective, just so you can hop into it. So actually this animation channel that's kind of mimicking another channel, Story Booth, that takes real stories from kids, teenagers, and animates it. But actually happened is just basically copying that.
Yeah.
And we don't know if they're true stories, but in a recent video you made with the whole Russian thing.
Oh, yeah.
Can you give me just a little bit of a rundown?
No, I can give you the whole rundown. Yeah. So so for starters, YouTube is a website where you can make money. On any website where you can make money, there will be people who try to make money. Some people will be doing that through the way that was designed by the people who made the site. Other people will be trying to do it by any means necessary, and other people will be doing it in some like sort of gray, moral gray area. There is a company called The Soul Publishing. And they're it's like based in Russia. It's a big production house, has a ton of employees. They make 5 Minute Crafts, which is now the third most subscribed channel on YouTube. When I first talked about it, they had 15 million subscribers, and that was a year ago. They have 50 million today.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And can you please explain to me, is this a 100% serious channel? Because every time I watch one of their videos, I'm like, wait, there's no way that this can be legit.
I don't think it's 100% serious. It's content meant to be clicked on and consumed rather
than
like... And so
half of it's meme-y, I'm not really going to make that.
I don't know
if
it's like super self-aware meme-y, but it is like... some of it is absurd on purpose.
Okay.
But there are also a lot of like legitimate life hacks. It's in this weird gray area where it's like, is this for real? Yeah. So they end up being absurd a lot of the time. But sometimes they are used by people, you know, like ironing a grilled cheese sandwich is technically a real life hack.
Or it's technically
a thing that works.
Making stuffing jeans to make a chair.
That one's completely absurd. Like the Jenna Marbles doing that was amazing.
Yeah.
But I actually got crap from some people when I made fun of the grilled cheese thing, because they were like, oh, well, if you are in this particular type of boarding school and you don't have like kitchens, but you do have irons, you might do this. And I'm like, okay,
sure.
But it's still dangerous. Not like the best way to, like, it's still like not necessarily a life hack. You could eat a cheese sandwich. Like you don't need to grill it with aluminum foil and an iron. But this is like, I've had my eye on them for a while just because they own so many channels on YouTube, hundreds of channels. And
really?
Yeah. And every one of their popular channels. So they have 5 Minute Crafts and Brightside, which are a 50 million and 20 million subscriber channel respectively. They also have Facebook pages with tens of millions of followers. They're probably one of the biggest content producers on YouTube. And 5 Minute Crafts makes like 3 videos a day, and they're all, my understanding is that they have thousands of 1-minute-ish clips that their strategy, and this is a strategy that works, like Ryan's Toy Reviews, who is an incredible creator. I was fortunate enough to meet Shion, Ryan's dad, at Summit. genius. He's a structural engineer. He is engineering YouTube. Oh, chef's kiss. Incredible.
I just thought it was billions a little
of views
kid.
On some of their videos. Oh, I have so many good things to say because those parents are like really putting their kids' life first and completely outside of YouTube.
That's good.
Ryan was young. He wanted to start a channel. But the parents were always like, you may not want to do this tomorrow. You didn't like peanut butter sandwiches yesterday. You like them today, whatever.
Right.
Ryan, the child, works 5 hours a week on the channel, and they've made so many systems. They've made animation characters so that Ryan doesn't need to be on camera. It's brilliant.
Wow.
They're a great example of people who are crushing it on YouTube
and not extorting their young child.
Their child or, and it, I just, they're such a shining example as I understand it, because there's so much child exploitation or question mark gray area child stuff on YouTube. So that was an aside. The Soul Publishing, they have thousands of life hacks. And so what they do is they compile a bunch of 1 minute clips into a video that's like 20 minutes long, and then they call it like 22 life hacks for the house and home, or 23 life hacks that'll make your whole life a whole lot easier. And like oftentimes they're not at all related to the title, and there's never the number of life hacks in the title. It like doesn't matter. It's because people who are consuming them are children. My friend's like, I'm in Nepal, and these like two Nepalese boys just like watch 5 minute crafts like on repeat. And I'm like, that makes sense, because it's like Ryan Toy Reviews, they make compilation videos of their stuff, and it's their highest grossing type of video because kids will rewatch.
I've seen a lot of friends who now have kids see the views correlate with sticking their kid in the video, whether it's a gray area or not. You guys can whatever with that, but they stick their kid in the thumbnail and they make a very kid friendly title, and it's interesting to see the view, like, and comment ratio, because the views are crazy. Don't correlate it with,
right.
But then the comments will just be like kid gibberish, but it'll be a lot of engagement.
That's always wild to look at. Kid gibberish, really common. Just, you know, you have to be 13, quote unquote, to be on YouTube. It's like bright side.
That's not true.
My favorite example of like, if anybody's like, prove to me that there are children on YouTube. My favorite, other than the obvious examples, my favorite is that Brightside made a video, because they do all kinds of weird clickbait stuff. But they're like, this magic trick will guess your age, and then it's like a math equation where it's like you divide two by whatever, blah blah blah. And then in the comments is all these kids that are like, it said 14, but I'm actually 9. And it's like, got them, you know, woo, woo, like we're around the police, you know, that's, it's just so funny to me.
And with the drama recently, it's become this moral gray area, because technically, even in some countries, you're not allowed to market to minors. And so that's what YouTube has been dealing with. And that's why it's these channels that come up. I question, are they monetarily like successful?
They're hugely monetarily successful because
I guess we can just target kids in America and that's fine. Like,
because everyone on YouTube is like 13 to 18 and or their parents' accounts. There's enough noise where it's like ads are running.
Right.
And it's like these are probably I would probably be willing to bet that like the people consuming these ads are not consumers. They're like children.
Right.
You know, but
because that's my question too. If they don't have their own credit card or they're not comprehending the ad, is it even worth to spend that ad money with that audience?
I would argue that it is almost definitely not.
Okay.
But that's not like the YouTube ad bidding stuff is.
It's a whole other thing.
It's like
they want sheer numbers, right?
Yeah, they would never. Yeah. I think that it just works that it's like they use the same system that everyone does. So, you know, no one at Oreo has like watched one of my videos, but like an Oreo ad might run in a mid-roll or whatever. Okay, so sorry, I'm like all over the place. I apologize. I like barely slept this weekend. So they make 3 videos a day, 20 minutes.
Videos a day.
It's like I describe them as content farms because what else can you describe this as? It's not like a creator trying their best, you know?
No.
And there's not
shout
like
out to your merch.
But I talk about it because it's a it's a thing that I do want people to be aware of. It's not the biggest problem on YouTube by any means, but I can make fun of it and not feel guilty about it.
Because it's hundreds of people in Russia.
Yeah.
Not you or me.
Yeah.
Trying to...
Yeah, or just like, it's very different to criticize a company than to criticize a person. So And life hacks are silly. So then it can be fun where no one feels bad about
it. Right. But the animated thing.
Oh, yeah. And then so the animated thing is just like a new... It's just them doing their magic, you know? So they find a market. They found DIY and stuff before. They're always searching. They've got Riddles channels. They've got... I'm trying to think of other channels that have grown. Like Brightside's their super clickbaity one. But hundreds. Like across a bunch of different niches, you can tell how they're testing their content. I have so many theories and I've observed so many random things that I cannot get into because we will run out of time. But they're just milking money out of it. And it's, I mean, honestly, someone is going to do that.
Yeah.
That's what happens in a system like this.
Right.
Everyone isn't a good actor or even if they're like, even if 5 Minute Crafts you could call a good actor, they are probably using the platform differently than anyone would expect them to. But the thing where it gets like, I get pretty frustrated with them is with the Story Booth example where like...
They're trying to be very genuine. This is your genuine stories, guys. Yeah. These are just stories of teenagers.
So yeah, Story Booth. Basically they co-opted like the imagery and style of story and premise of Story Booth, which is that kids submit stories and then their videos are almost definitely not the ones that are submitted to them by kids. I don't doubt that kids are sending them stories, but if you look at the comments where people are like, leave your story in the comments down below or in the or send it to our email, the stories are completely incomprehensible. And like Story Booth has staff and works with parents and then has they edit the story together with the parents and then they have the kid record it,
Which is so much work. So why don't we just hire some writers and do it in the voice of a teenager and pump out a video a day and get millions of views?
Yeah. Why not make a video a day instead? You know, it's like, because it's...
They get over a million views a day. They post one animated story a day.
Yeah.
And they're banking on the relatability of teenagers and they are saying, hey, these are genuine stories and they're not.
Manipulation.
Yeah.
It's my most recent video, I played on how ridiculous their titles are because I made a little website where you could automatically generate titles that were based on all the existing titles of it. And so it's always like, you know, it's like my dad killed a, you know, it's like what, it's like something super sensationalist always happens or some sort of emotional manipulation.
Yeah.
Like if I were to...
Oh, please read some of the titles.
Yeah.
And it was so funny when I was going to that channel for the first time and started to watch the videos, it would suck me in. I would sit there and watch almost a full video because I'm like, oh, what happened to the dad that divorced the mom and then got together with this crazy new wife? And then, oh no, the daughter is feeling all left out. And what happened to the stepson?
And then once you get, 4 minutes into the video, you've paid 4 minutes of average view duration. The video turns out to be clickbait.
Yeah.
You know, cause it's like they don't resolve the clickbait until the end. And no one's clicking off at that point, so they've already got your stuff. They've already juiced their metrics.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of garbage YouTube accounts, throwaway accounts with horrible recommendations because I find a lot of stuff. So this is I'm literally just subscribed to both of these channels, and these are just the most recent videos. So 19 hours ago, okay, this is I preferred a guy to a friend and lost both. I hated my daughter until I found out the truth. My mom got extremely obese after my dad left us. My classmate is a murderer. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm in love with my cousin. My parents were psychopaths and I didn't even notice. And you just see, my mom is in a cult. This is funny. My wig got snatched in school.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm a slave of my stepmother. I discovered that I have 1 week left to live. All right. And then like one that I talked about recently was called My Friends Think I'm Dead. So it's like they end up just being
A sensationalist.
Yeah.
I feel like it's probably pulling on the same feeling of when I was in high school, you know, I watched One Tree Hill.
Yeah.
And those were real people, but it was very clearly fiction, right? So there was that line. But at the same time, in the same year, the uncle would get shot, the school would have a gun shooter, someone yeah. would do it and get pregnant, and it was this like crazy these crazy circumstances that you would kind of like start thinking in your head like, oh, drama's more exciting.
Yeah.
This is more exciting. Yeah. And that's kind of what this is doing, but on a daily basis.
But then I'm also like, so my point often is these are weird cartoons and we should ask ourselves, or we should make ourselves aware that this is what they are.
Right. And they're legitimizing saying they're real stories,
and they have questionable morals.
Right.
So like, you'll watch the story and then the moral will be like, like someone in one of the videos, they say that they, this girl that she didn't like was dating a boy that she had a crush on. So she made a fake Instagram account and photoshopped a photo of herself with the dude, but then blurred her face. And then the couple broke up, which none of that story makes sense, logistically, which is like why I talked about it in a video. Then the moral that she learns, the reason that she gets found out is that she tells another girl about her secret Instagram that she made. And she was like, oh, you're the girl who made the secret Instagram? And then her moral is that I told the truth to the wrong person. And I'm like, no, the moral is like, maybe don't try to destroy someone's life.
And that's what you get when you have probably 40-year-old men in Russia trying to have the voice of a teenage girl.
Well, so, their entire staff, their entire economics business plan, I'm pretty sure I understand how it works because I made my own parody animation channel as a satire to this. They hire exclusively freelancers. And
like the Fiverr move.
Yeah, so in my first video about it, I was like, why is YouTube trending this fake channel? Because I think it's weird that YouTube was trending it multiple times. And in that, I like went and like poked around the internet and I found most of their stories I could find on like AMAs or Today I Fucked Up subreddit and stuff. Mm. Like, and the stories were so specific. So for example, I broke up with my girlfriend because of potatoes was the name of a story. And it was about how a guy pretended when he was at a family dinner with his girlfriend that he didn't know what potatoes were. And then
I watched some of that. Wait, so they took a story from Reddit and just made a video.
Right. So that my original, the first time I talked about them, it was like, hey, they're claiming to be Story Booth, but every video that I've watched, I've been able to trace back to the plot of an existing movie or television show or a Reddit post or something that someone posted online with odd specifics still left in. And then I had someone reach out to me on Reddit that was like, oh, hey, I applied for a job at The Soul Publishing. And for Actually Happened, they hit me up and here, do you want the job description? And I was like, yes, please do send that to me. And then I talked about this in the video as well, where it's like, oh, these need to appear to be real, make them sound like it's like a teenager and you can pull inspiration from anywhere. And it's like, okay, yeah. So like, this is what we thought all along. It's just a bunch of freelancers and like some people like pulling the strings and doing content review and stuff.
Wow.
And then additionally after that, I had someone reach out to me who animated for them. I've also talked to somebody who voice acted for them. So now I'm like sort of, cause I'm just curious, right? It's like, how does this stuff work?
So the person who animated for them,
they recruited them off of the, Newgrounds forums and they pay like below market rate, for animation. And they have like ridiculous asks and they tell these people that they like expect like 40 hours of work, a week out of them. And their pay pretty low. It, from what I understand, is pretty low compared to what this person who like worked in animation was telling me.
Do you know what a market rate for like a 5-minute animated YouTube video would be?
I know that Actually Happened pays $600 to $800.
Okay.
They might pay more now, but for it's actually hand animated. Actually Happened's production quality is quite high.
Yeah.
Because they know what they're doing.
And they're like 7 to 10 minutes. So those are longer.
They know what they're doing. But they pay as little as they can to get the quality that they want. But then My Story Animated, which is a copy of that copy, is even less high quality. But after I made my video, they took out a lot of the references to it being real. It's like a lot of it's illusions now. in the stories, they're always like, well, thanks for listening to my story. I hope I figure it out or whatever. And then the pinned comment is always like, what did you think of how Dan's mom died? You know, it's like, and it's all just so absurd and weird. I don't know if it breaks rules or anything, but I do think that like the tactics that they use, which for actually happened, it grew. I talked about it when it had 800,000 or 700,000 subscribers the first time, and now it has 2 million, and that was only 3 months ago. When I talked about them, I also like talked to somebody from Story Booth who reached out to me and was telling me that when they started, they just copied every bit of metadata from Story Booth in order to like tell the algorithm that they were like super similar. Like kind of the equivalent of like metadata stuffing or whatever of Story Booth videos and making similar topics so that they would get
to ride the same wave.
Yeah, so they would hit the capture the wave, which is like a technique that I use, you know, when I want YouTube to know that I'm related to other people. I may make a similar video. You make a video reviewing like a phone, you like, because it's the thing that everyone's doing. But the way that it's done is so calculated that it's like, ooh, weird.
And they're so similar, which is, you know.
And you just know that they're drafting behind the work that Story Booth did.
Right.
So then it goes into like this thing about how easy it is, how hard it is to be successful for original content on YouTube versus like if you just copy an existing thing. And it's all fine. I think it's like gray to black hat in terms of like the tactics. But it's just something to be aware of. Like, I don't know how YouTube feels about someone essentially able to like drown out content. Like, if anybody jumps into your genre, like I believe that the DIY community was like, is affected by 5 minute crafts, because if you like jump into some, if a company like jumps into your niche and then pumps out a million videos a minute and saturates everything, you can't go to the, if you go to the YouTube logged out front page, you see two to three channels that are owned by the sole publisher.
And then you're competing against someone with a bajillion employees. Yeah. And when it's just you, that's when
And I don't believe, I think that YouTube is privy to a lot of these things in terms of algorithm abuse, quote unquote, but there are, it does like make you think.
Right.
And it does make you think about like, well, should they have 1,000 channels? Or should they have 500 channels? Or, you know, it's like, I get it. Like, it makes sense, but is there a limit? Because I feel like if I had an unlimited amount of money, it would not be hard to make money on YouTube. You know,
you have money, it's easier to make money.
I could figure out how to make money in a niche on YouTube by copying someone else's content at a low cost. You know, my fake animation channel has 40,000 subscribers.
Okay.
And in 3 weeks or whatever.
Wow.
And part of it's the joke, but still, like, there are people who watch that who don't know that it's parody, and that's kind of the point. And it's hilarious.
It's like this big inside joke.
It's fun for me, because I'm just like, I'll just, while the world burns, I'll just be poking fun at all of it.
Well, and that's what, you know, that's what's refreshing about you coming into something like commentary, is I think it can't just be, as much as I used to watch H3H3, and you don't have to make a comment on this, because I'm sure you watch them, but they've become so just talking shit about everything. And so it's very refreshing when commentary is actually productive, and it maybe isn't like you have to call people out, you know, but at the same time, it's like doing it in a productive way that calls out things that maybe are just in that gray area, right? And and what you said, it's entertainment. You're still trying.
Yeah.
You're still doing, you know, the comedy sketches.
Right.
It's not just breaking up a 2-hour podcast into clips.
Right.
And
I mean, that is like, I think, a completely separate thing. But the I don't want to comment specifically on H3, but I think that they've received a lot of criticism, which is, it's interesting to see how the commentary community has responded to comments that are made here and there. And I hope that, you know, any of that feedback is being taken to heart, because I don't think
because they started out so I mean, their videos were so great. And then I think people are just like, you know, the shift to only the podcast has been a shock to people.
I get that,
but
too,
then I guess
that's
you
like
gotta,
a mental health thing
yeah,
too.
Is, and they gotta
I,
do that.
I don't like to talk about people. I think of power dynamics a lot when within commentary. And for me, especially as I've grown, I felt bad making my first 5 minute crafts video. A little bit. I was like, I think I'm okay to do this, but I really do worry about hurting people's feelings. And because I know that there's no like individual human who's like, there's no one emotionally affected if I say like this life hack's weird.
Right.
But talking about a person, I think should be done very tactfully. And like when I talk about TikToks, I'm usually, you know, focus, if I'm ever talking about a person or an individual, focusing on the action rather than like the person is usually a good way to go. Unless like what I think they do sometimes is morally reprehensible. Like, and it's like, I'm not the morality police, but I do feel very strongly about I'm J Station making a video where he pretends to call Mac Miller from the dead a couple days after he passes away.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Or uses like Kermit the Frog and like does a super homophobic like gay potion video where he pretends to be gay for three videos in a row. And it's like, what is this?
Yeah.
And that stuff is I don't know. This person has repeated behavior
right,
that I feel is worth calling out. Or I've also, I'm trying to think of the times I've talked about individuals. I talked about a guy who does gold digger pranks, because I don't think that should be a
gold
thing that people
pranks
do.
Yeah, nice.
But other than that, I do like to just talk about trends in general, or thinking about how it's really just like things that I find interesting or weird. And then trying to make that digestible. I don't know where it all comes from. Like the 5 minute crafts thing was such a happy accident, because I was like, has no one talked about this?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Well, that's you being, and I guess what I'm trying to get at is I appreciate your awareness. In a big world of commentary, I appreciate the thoughtfulness behind it.
I appreciate that. I'm not one for drama, and I know that people's content is not who they are as people.
Right. Which is something you have to keep reminding yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I or any of us as creators are immune to criticism and I also think that we hold a responsibility for what we share with our audiences and how we share it because of the impact that it can have. So if I, for example, I talked about, you know, one of these channels from 5 minute crafts and people were like, oh, I'm gonna like apply to a job with them. I'm like, no, dude, fuck that. Like, don't do that. Like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to like mess with anybody's life. I want to be a part of the feedback cycle.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And
that I don't want to bring hate to anybody, because I don't think that's productive. I don't think it's how we like change hearts and minds.
Yeah. No, I love it. Yeah. I think that's a good point to end on.
Yeah.
I don't want you to miss your flight, but oh my gosh, we're going to have to do a part two.
Because
I feel like when I was talking to you, it was like one of those conversations where I'm like bursting at the seams, you
know?
Oh my God,
excuse me for like just word vomiting a lot.
No, I love it though. And that's what they want. It's such an exciting journey to watch, but you're so knowledgeable and it's so refreshing your take that you've taken.
Well,
so
I can't say that I'm trying my best anymore, which is a mistake. I shouldn't have ruined that phrase for myself, but I'm just keeping on.
keeping on.
Yeah.
And so you have @Jarvis everywhere, Twitter
and
Instagram.
@Jarvis on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay. If people are too lazy to go down on the show notes, follow him @Jarvis. Search Jarvis
hi.
Johnson on the YouTubes.
I reply to a lot of DMs.
Love it.
Yeah.
Guys, go DM
him. Yeah.
Say what's up. Thank you so much for being
absolutely
on.
Thanks so
this
much
has
for
been
having me.
Such a pleasure. Guys, by the way, we did this at 7:30 a.m.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I would like to applaud us.
Yeah, no, pat ourselves on the back. This is 2 Millennium millennials, two millennials, yes, getting up early and celebrating about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So have a great flight back to the
Thanks
West
so
Coast.
Much. You have a wonderful day as well.
Yeah, make sure, guys, subscribe. Can't even talk anymore on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And then if you want to see the exclusive video version of this podcast, you can go to youtube.com/Sarah Dici and hit that join button. But of course, it's everywhere on Mondays for free on all of the audio platforms. So make sure to subscribe. All right. Bye.
See ya.